Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Right now, down on 4th Street in Berkeley, kitty corner from the Apple Store, there's a parking lot. But in the deep past, that whole area would have been an Ohlone settlement, right on the mouth of Strawberry Creek, which runs down through Cal's campus and out to the bay there. And thanks to a huge new deal between the Segurite Land Trust, the city of Berkeley, and the owner of that site, in the future, that land will be a center of Ohlone culture, right there. Berkeley's calling it the biggest urban land-back deal in the country, and for Segurite, which put up most of the money, it's a hard-won victory in a fight that's been going on for 20 years to one way of measuring, and centuries to another. We'll talk with the people who made it happen right after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. The land back news was big here in the Bay Area last week. The Segurite Land Trust put up $25.5 million and the city of Berkeley chipped in $1.5 million to purchase the 2.2-acre lot at 1900 West 4th Street in Berkeley, the last undeveloped portion of what's believed to be the oldest Ohlone settlement in the area, right along what would have been the pre-contact coastline. In just a few years, Landbeck has gone from an idea to a movement to a series of land deals that have placed chunks of East Bay property into the care of the Segurite Land Trust, which is led by our first guest, Karina Gould, who's also spokeswoman and tribal chair of the Confederated Villages of Lisjan Nation. Welcome.
Good morning.
We're also joined by Sophie Hahn, council member of Berkeley District 5. Welcome, councilwoman.
Welcome. Thank you.
Karina, how are you feeling? Like, how have the last few weeks been for you? How'd you react when you kind of this deal came together?
Wow. I think I'm still trying to wake up from it, to be honest with you. It's been an incredible journey that I believe that our ancestors brought us all together to do. And, I'm just emotional, I think, still. I'm still trying to figure out, wow, this really happened. And we were all able to be a part of this great imagination. And I'm so grateful to the thousands of people that have been a part of this over the last 8 years for this struggle, for the last 20 years and longer. So I'm really grateful for the city of Berkeley and their partnership in this whole process.
Because, Karina, last time we talked, I think you told me, if I'm remembering right, that you got into this activism around a different Shell Mound conflict, right? And so does it feel like there's a certain kind of circularity or a kind of closing of a certain chapter?
Only on this one. You know, there were 425 Shell Mounds that ring the Bay Area. Most of them are underneath pavement, like the one at West Berkeley that we just freed. But there's so much education that needs to be done in the Bay Area and so many things that we are trying to protect even today as we celebrate this victory of the West Berkeley Shell Mound.
Councilwoman Hahn, you know, what does this mean for the city of Berkeley? I mean, this is like a pretty revolutionary thing, and Berkeley is one of the few cities in the country to have returned land back to Native people.
Well, I think it's a huge event, not just for the Ohlone, but for the city of Berkeley, for the whole Bay Area. This is an incredibly important site. It's the history of the Ohlone people. It's the first known settlement, the oldest known settlement in the entire Bay Area. And we're all part of the same human family. This is everyone's history. This is the ancient history of people in the Bay Area. And so I think it's an incredible moment for Berkeley. This is a time when we are saying we are going to honor and preserve our history, everyone's history.
Karina, I don't know if it's just because the Apple Store is there. Like, it just feels like I keep thinking how incredible it is that there will be an Ohlone cultural center right there, like in this kind of really populated area. I mean, last time we talked, it was about the land deal up in the Oakland Hills. This feels really different to be like right in amongst where, you know, just thousands of people come all the time.
And I think that that's wonderful. Imagine that we actually are uplifting the history and the resiliency of the Lashon people right there where we had originally been all along, to talk about that history, that there's the foot traffic there, that mm-hmm. there's the corridor of the, you know, the train, the Amtrak is there, there's buses that go right there, and that there will actually be a place in the Bay Area that actually talks about our history and our resiliency, that there's a place that actually gives us visibility again. Mm. And every fourth grader in the Bay Area has to learn about our people and California Native history, and a place for people to go and to learn about that, and a green space in that area that's so congested. Yeah. It feels like it's going to be a place for everyone to feel good.
Yeah. You know, for people who've only known it in the sort of our modern era, what would the land have looked like thousands of years ago when Native people tended it? Like, I'm sure you've kind of imagined in your mind based on the all the stories you've heard and the evidence that you've got.
Yeah, and you have to imagine that the 2.2 acres of land that we were able to save, you know, it wasn't just a shell mound, a burial site, but it was a village site that, you, as you said, Strawberry Creek ran across it, that we were fishermen, and that this was a place where it was teeming with life, not just human life, but other life. Mm. You know, I think that Malcolm Margolin does a beautiful description of the Bay Area in a Ohlone way, where he talks about thousands of birds and grizzly bears and whales. But imagine going, houses, homes, people lived there, ceremony was happening. Mm. People were making nets and fishing in the bay and taking out boats, that there was trading happening and children laughing and music and cooking. I mean, everything that you could find in a home was happening there thousands of years ago, even before the pyramids were built.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about Councilwoman, the actual like agreement or the deal and what it determined. So what are the kind of things people need to know about what the big pillars of the deal are?
Well, it's actually not that complicated. The city of Berkeley was involved in litigation with the property owner over their attempts to build on this archaeological, historical parcel. And in settling that litigation, we were able to achieve a deal where, using funds that were obtained by the Segrete Land Trust primarily, and some funds from the city of Berkeley, we were literally able to purchase the parcel. And in the same moment, and we are going to sort of finish that act tonight at the Berkeley City Council.
Oh, wow.
We simultaneously are receiving the land from the current owner, and then we are conveying it in the same moment to the trust. And that's it. Wow. We got the land and we're giving it back.
Yeah. Karina Gould, I mean, complicated part was the money, right? you know, people may know that many people in the East Bay pay Shumi land tax, like a voluntary land tax to the nation. And there's also been some big philanthropic dollars that have come through as well. Can you describe what it was like to put together? I mean, $25.5 million is not a small sum of money.
Yeah, it is not a small sum of money. And we are very blessed to have had Katali Foundation gift us through Shumi, the Segrete Land Trust, $20 million as a spend down foundation. Their generosity allowed us to dream about being able to purchase back our sacred site. And then, of course, we had to find more money. And we were blessed by all of the different foundations in the Bay Area coming together. But at the end, it was the 11th Hour Foundation, the Schmidt Family Foundation, that gave $2.9 million. And another foundation that gave the 2.1. Wow. But the Show Me Tax has been an amazing way that many of the foundations in the Bay Area have been able to look at the work that Segurite Land Trust is doing and understand that it is a way to partner with the Segurite Land Trust to do the work of rematriation. And so, you know, the San Francisco Foundation and many other foundations that are in the Bay Area have become partners with us in the work that we are doing on land rematriation. And we look forward to many more partnerships in order to see this vision through. So yeah, $25.5 million was astronomical to come up with. But, you know, I don't think you could put a price on protecting the sacred. And we've had many people that stood with us to do this work. And, you know, we're very grateful that we all said yes to this ancestral calling at this time.
I mean, just a few years ago, could you have anticipated raising that much money? Like, where do you, it feels like there was a change in like how people began to think about land back. Can you like peg it to a year, or do you think it's just been kind of like a smooth, like people really coming to understand the weight of this history and the need for reparation?
I really think that the land back movement has been this consciousness raising that has happened throughout the world. And I think that there are different points in time and history that consciousness changes. And I believe that this is one time when people are understanding. Here in the Bay Area, it has been the work that we have done over the last 30 years to educate the public that we're still here, that there are many Ohlone nations in the Bay Area, and that we've not been, we've never moved. We've never left our homelands. And to do the education about shell mounds. And I believe that people want to know where they live and want to figure out how to come back into right relationship with land and water and air. And how do we do that together as human beings when we're all facing this idea of climate disaster? And I really believe that we're all trying to figure this out. And I think that the land back movement has been beautiful to watch across the country and across the world as we're seeing Indigenous people getting land returned to them in order to help it heal, and bringing others along with us to do that work together.
Well put. We're talking about the site of an ancient Indigenous shell mound in Berkeley that's being returned to Native hands with Karina Gould, director of Segurite Land Trust, spokeswoman and tribal chair of the Confederated Villages of Lees John, as well as Sophie Hahn, council member, Berkeley District 5. Ludovic tweets, "This is truly great. Congrats to the Katali Foundation for making the investment, Native American group for buying the property, and as a Berkeley resident, I'm looking forward to what comes next." We're going to talk about that. What questions do you have about this site or about the land back movement? You can email your comments or questions to forum@kqed.org. You can find us on all of our social things, or you can give us a call, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more right after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about a big win in the land back movement, an ancient site of shell mound in Berkeley being returned to Native hands. Joined by Sophie Hahn, council member with Berkeley District 5, Karina Gould, director of the Segurite Land Trust, as well as spokeswoman and tribal chair of the Confederated Villages of Lees John. We want to add a couple of other guests. We're also joined by Farima Brown, who's city attorney in Berkeley. Welcome, Farima.
Glad to be here.
And we're also joined by Melissa Nelson, who's the board president of the Sigourte Land Trust, professor of Indigenous Sustainability at Arizona State University. Welcome, Melissa.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Melissa, tell me a little bit about how you think this particular land back action fits into this kind of the broader movement that's occurring, you know, across the country that Karina was talking about before the break.
Yes, well, you know, the land back movement has really been accelerating, as you had mentioned, for the last, I'd say, 20 to 30 years. And, you know, we could even look back at the historic occupation of Alcatraz in 1969 by urban American Indians as a form of land back. So we're part of a long tradition. But fortunately, there's been more public consciousness about it in the last 10, 20 years. I think the Standing Rock occupation in 2016 really galvanized and woke people up to the historic injustices to Native peoples. And I think the Berkeley Shell Mound is so symbolic of, you know, the urban Indian experience and for Indigenous peoples like Karina's community and ancestors, whose homelands had become urban areas. You can look at, you know, her people in Oakland. You can look at the Tongva people of Los Angeles. You can look at my Ojibwe and other Potawatomi ancestors in Chicago. I mean, every urban area in the U.S. and in the world was once native lands. And we forget that. There's been an erasure of Indigenous presence in urban landscapes. And so this is so important for restoring that rich history and also, more importantly, the presence. As Ruth Orta and other elders often say, we are still here. We are still here. And the incredible leaders of California Native Nations are still here despite histories of erasure, genocide, and atrocities. And so this opportunity to educate and for them to have a safe space of their own in a historic village to reconnect with those ancestors and also to support a strong and vibrant future for their future descendants and for all of the relatives, the plants, the animals, the waters, the creek, all the life that gives life is so important. So I see it as a spiritual reclamation, an ecological reclamation, and obviously a deep cultural reclamation that is so important and symbolic for Indigenous peoples around the world.
Yeah. You know, as you mentioned that, obviously there's many tribal nations in many cities that may be trying to figure out, like, how do I get this rolling? Like, what does it take to make something like this work? Aside from money, which we, of course, know is very difficult to assemble. But Freemar, I wanted to bring you in on this. Can you talk to me a little bit about what this most recent era of the dispute and litigation kind of looked like? And how did it start to move in this direction?
That's an excellent question. And I just want to start by saying that this deal really was one of the most gratifying projects I've ever worked on after 6 years of just a very hard fought lawsuit to be able to bring parties that had very different aspirations and goals together to creatively problem solve and get us to this point was really satisfying. And the origin of the lawsuit was that the property owner, well, actually, let me step back. The property owner had applied to build a housing project on the site. Was going through the normal channels and the conventional process, which involves
community consultation and
all environmental review and the various steps that normal applications go through. In the midst of that, a new law passed, and the applicant slash property owner decided to kind of put that traditional conventional land use application on pause.
And they used, it was SB 35, right? Which
Correct.
Allowed for just like basically speed processing of this kind of development.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So the fast tracking piece of legislation was used to sort of abandon the traditional process and use this other new tool that was in the toolbox. The challenge of the new piece of legislation was the way it was crafted. It didn't foresee all the different fact patterns and permutations. And this is a unique site. It's a site that the city had landmarked in 2000, and it's also on the state's historic registry. So, and interestingly enough, the law actually changed, potentially because of this lawsuit, to really clarify that kind of streamlining tool didn't necessarily apply to indigenous sites and tribal consultation needed to take place. So, going back to the application process and then the fast tracking, the city went through a pretty meticulous process to determine, hey, this is a new law. It just came down. The first SB 35 application in California came to us. It was related to this site.
Wow.
And we were trying to kind of decipher how the law jives with this. And after just very methodically looking at it, staff had determined that it didn't qualify for that streamlining and that it needed to go through the traditional conventional process.
And
the property owner
sued.
Yeah. And the trial judge actually agreed with the city's analysis and ruled in our favor. But then we were for years embattled in this.
Right. It went to California Supreme Court, right? And they ruled in favor of the developer. Yeah.
It went back and forth.
The California Supreme Court did not take it up. Interestingly, the city thought it was a worthy case to be heard by the highest court.
Yeah.
And they did not take it up. Huh. So then it sort of traveled back to
circuitous, a long and winding road.
Karina, during this process, which obviously began a long time ago, long before the current lawsuit and all these things, but as this is playing out around SB 35 and around the lawsuit as it went back and forth, did you think that you were going to win? Like, were there, I imagine there's some pretty low points along the way.
Yeah, I think it took a lot of faith. And I think that, I think about 5 years in, we were asking ourselves what's going on. And a lot of, I had these really amazing organizers that I was working with, two sets of organizers that were working on different projects around it. And I think, during COVID, it started feeling horrible and stuff. But I think that it was the faith of bringing people together at the site, of knowing that our ancestors didn't take us down this road for no reason at all, that after all of this time that we would come to a conclusion and that we would free the West Berkeley Shamah. I just know that people, I continue to go down there and pray, and I know other people have gone down there and continue to go down there and pray, and that this has become a central place in the Bay Area, even for activists that work on many different kinds of fronts, that this is a place where we know that we come together with the same mind. And that has been beautiful to watch, that all people from all walks of life, from all religions, from all ethnic backgrounds have come here and said yes. And so, yes, there were some times when it was low, when I lost my brother, but we still showed up and surrounded that shell mound with candlelight, and that we had painting parties. And, I think that the Bay Area stood up. And in times of darkness, that this has been a light. And I'm forever grateful for all of those thousands of people that came together to help us to do this work, to hold up our hearts when we felt low.
Councilwoman?
Yeah, interestingly for me as well, faith is what comes to mind, because I never for a minute lost faith because I knew this was the right outcome. And eventually, somehow, we get to the right outcome. And we had an incredible team. I mean, I also believe that all the gathering and the prayer and the heart and intent that was brought forward by a very large community it buoyed us and it helped us remember always that it was the right thing. But there was also a lot of hard work. Karina Gould was out trying to get the money. Freema Brown was busy charting new territory in the law and litigating a law that had never been tested before. And then myself and the mayor, we were problem solving all the time. And there were many junctures where the city council had to weigh in, usually in closed session, because litigation matters are behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean we don't have to try and get 5 votes to keep going and get resources for the city to keep litigating. And so there was just this sense that no matter what came at us, we would pick up, all of us together, and just keep going because of this searing clarity that this was the right thing. It was the right thing for the Ohlone. It was the right thing for Berkeley as a community. It is a form of restitution. It honors our past. It speaks to Berkeley's values around equity and justice and fairness. And we are also an intellectual community that values history and learning. And so there's just so many elements of this that are just bedrock, literally and figuratively, Berkeley. I never lost faith. And every time we were down, we just got back together and we said, what's next?
Before we turn to what's going to happen to the site, which I'm excited to hear about, one listener writes, $27 million sounds like a high price. What justified that value? And maybe, I guess we'll come, how did these negotiations go? I'm not sure which of our city people wants to take this.
I mean, eventually it, it just comes down to the parties agreeing to a number and...
Just 20. A market transaction
market.
Built over the top of this sacred place.
The money doesn't represent only the value of the site. It also represents a settlement to litigation, and litigation is settled all the time with exchange of cash. And so just to be clear, I mean, it's a global settlement of both of litigation that included this transfer of land. Mm-hmm.
Let's bring in our first caller here, Elizabeth in Oakland. Welcome.
Yeah. Okay. So I put down
the, hi, Elizabeth. Can you hear me? We'll come back to you. What I did want to talk about, and maybe Karina, you could talk about this initially, is the plan. Like, what's the vision for this site and how it will work in relationship to Strawberry Creek specifically?
Wow. Yeah. While we were in zoning meetings and we had hundreds of people keeping our zoning folks up in Berkeley for hours and hours, I was approached by a gentleman in Berkeley. His name is Chris Walker. And he said, we need a vision. And everybody's seeing these pictures of this development, but they don't see a vision. Will you trust me to come and meet with me and talk about what a vision could be? And so we sat down one Saturday afternoon and we talked about opening up Strawberry Creek where it had originally run and putting these structures on top of the land, not digging into the land so that we don't destroy the ancestral place, and building the land up so that we could actually grow trees and to begin to imagine so that the imagination of the people could happen. I have to talk to, when I was doing work with fourth graders have great imaginations, adults not so much. But to have a picture in front of you to see what possibilities there are, that this mound could be there, that it's covered with poppies, and 4 months out of the year from the Campanile, you can see this orange mound and that people could actually go there. So it's this dream of revitalizing a portion of the village site that was once blocks and blocks of what now is the city of Berkeley. It's a part of the landscape that could be there. And so You know, I dream about that. But, you know, like you said, we had to come up with $25.5 million. Now we have to come up with a lot more. Yeah. And so it's a beautiful dream that I'm hoping that, you know, that we're going to engage other people. We're going to ask people to come and be a part of that part of the dream as well. And to raise this money to do the work that will allow that space to be there in Berkeley, allow this destination place to be there for a long time to come. And so that's the dream of it. We have a plan for it, and it's going to cost quite a bit of money. And we are hoping to also, at the same time as we construct it, create a memorial fund that will actually keep up the costs of it as we go forward. So that there's a, so that's the dream. The dream is to have that happen. We're still catching our breath from and have not yet got the title in our hand. So we are still
tonight, I think, right? Didn't I hear tonight?
Yeah. Well, tonight is the second reading of the ordinance. And then I think there's a few more paperwork and filings and title transfers.
There'll be some signatures involved over some time, I'm sure.
Yeah. You know, escrow, like everybody else has to go through, right? And so
it is
like
a real estate transaction.
Yeah,
exactly. Thank you, Farima. You know, I think Farima has been absolutely wonderful. And I always want to thank her for actually seeing the vision of this and really sticking with it for the city of Berkeley and the lawyer team. And I really need to thank my lawyers, Tom Lippi and Michelle Lee, who have worked on side by side in getting this done. But, you know, my lawyer, Michelle, said we're in labor right now. And so that's where kind of happened. And I was like, that's
you're like, oh, that's why it's so painful. Got it. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. We're talking about the site of an ancient Ohlone shell mound in West Berkeley that's being returned to native hands with Karina Gould, director of the Segorite Land Trust, also spokeswoman and tribal chair of the Confederated Villages of Lishan. Also joined by Sophie Hahn, Berkeley City Council member, joined by Melissa Nelson, board president of the Segorite Land Trust and professor of Indigenous Sustainability at Arizona State, and Farima Brown, city attorney for Berkeley. We're curious, what questions do you have about this particular site, about shell mounds around the Bay Area, or about the land back movement, future plans for this site? You can email us, forum@kqed.org. Find us on all the social channels. Give us a call, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. We're going to get to more calls and questions after the break. One comment, Adina writes, I've been paying Shumi land tax for years. I'm surprised by how many people who currently reside on Ohlone land have not heard of it. Paying this tax to the original stewards, the Lishan territories who continue to rematriate the land, is so important and a simple way to participate in reparations. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more right after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about a big win for the land back movement here in the Bay Area. The West Berkeley shell mound is being returned to native hands thanks to a $27 million real estate deal. We're joined by Karina Gould, director of Segorite Land Trust. We're also joined by Melissa Nelson, who's board president of the Land Trust, joined by Berkeley council member Sophie Hahn and Berkeley city attorney Farima Brown. Let's, we have a listener who has this question. What's the deal with the Berkeley shell mounds? Like, why is it important? I have an archaeologist friend who talks about shell mounds as less important, but I've heard regarding the Berkeley shell mound that people were sometimes buried in these places. Melissa Nelson, how would you think about shell mounds and sort of native lands? What's their relationship? I mean, is one particular place more important than one other place? Or is this kind of all, you know, all this territory is in a sense sacred because it was all where people's ancestors lived?
Thank you. That's quite a question. And I'm sure Karina will have a lot to share about that too, having led shell mound walks, walking from the remnants and of the shell mounds all around the bay. There were hundreds and hundreds of shell mounds that dotted the whole San Francisco Bay Area, the coastline, wherever you find ocean coastlines or bays, you find shell mounds with indigenous peoples, and the Ohlone and other native peoples, Miwok of the Bay, really had elaborate shell mounds, and they're all different. Some are huge, really large, multi-story. Some were smaller, scattering of shells along the coastline where they'd gather abalone and shellfish and process on site, then bring back to the village. So like any historic cultural landscape, they vary in size and shape and location, but they all have great meaning and value symbolically, cosmologically, as sacred places, because so many of the nations and villages buried their elite dead there with regalia and many different artifacts. So they are in many, many ways truly sacred burial sites that need to be honored and protected as the sites where ceremony took place. And so sadly, most of these shell mounds have been labeled garbage heaps, dump piles by archaeologists. And this really indicates, sadly, the racism within old school archaeology, with looking at Native peoples as primitive or backwards, not having sophisticated knowledge. Thankfully, we're beginning to see that change with human rights archaeology, with more indigenous archaeologists really changing the way we interpret the past. So we really need to change the narrative about shell mounds not being garbage piles. There was no concept of garbage or waste. It was more like a sacred compost where you layer your relatives that gave you life, abalone and different oysters and clams and all the rich seafood that have deep symbolic meaning with sacred stories and creation stories embedded in them. So when you layered up these shells, it wasn't like us taking out the garbage at all. It was like creating a garden. And so it's part of this historic landscape that was nearly destroyed because it was turned into roads and, and backfill and just completely plowed under. And they found, you know, sometimes thousands of ancestral remains buried in sacred ways within these matrices. I worked on the Crissy Field Restoration Project over at the Presidio National Park, and that too was a very large, significant shell mound that took a lot to protect during the restoration of that site from basically a toxic military place to, a dynamic living park now with the salt marsh. And that's what could happen around the entire bay again. So these shell mounds, we need to rewrite the narrative about their significance. They should be looked at like the pyramids of Egypt. They should be looked at like the mounds, the Mississippi mounds. You know, they have that kind of level of architectural design, ecological, and religious value. And so this is an opportunity to rewrite that narrative and kind of restore and reconstruct a contemporary shell mound with the memorial site and the native landscaping and daylighting the creek and all those wonderful things Karina shared about making it a present, active village site once again.
You know, Karina, the specifics of this site vis-a-vis the shell mounds that were in this settlement became, you know, an issue during the litigation and back and forth. Like, how did you see those, you know, the kind of fight over the literally the specifics of, you know, was this marshland? Was this shell mound? Like, did you see that as, I don't know, how did you see it?
Well, I think that it's important that we get to, as Lashon people from this area, get to determine where our sacred sites are and what is contained inside them. And, you know, I think that there's been a lot of archaeological work done around the West Berkeley Shell Mound, starting with Nels Nelson back in 1906 when he created a map, and then many other archaeologists afterwards. But, you know, it was the work of Stephanie Manning who got it passed through the Lands Commission, you know, the Historic Preservation Commission in Berkeley, that landmarked it first. We knew that that place had always been there. Our relatives had always gone there and prayed, even though it was a parking lot, quietly when nobody was around. Nobody knew, but that this place has continued to be there as a part of our cosmology stories, that it wasn't something that was accidentally put there, but that there was a purpose for this first shell mound to be along the bay and how it aligns with our creation stories and our stories of who we are as a people. And, you know, it's a landscape. And I think that people need to understand that there are ancestral remains there, but also, you know, for blocks around that particular area, that, you know, that this is a place that our ancestors have been for thousands of years. And so I think, you know, when Melissa mentioned that we did walks, that people from all over the world came and walked with us to these shell mounds from Vallejo to San Jose and to San Francisco, a 300-mile trek, stopping at these shell mounds that were underneath this parking lot and railroad tracks and bars and schools and streets, and laying down prayers, because we understand that those places are important to us. The erasure that has happened because of development in the Bay Area is because those shell mounds were destroyed. But it doesn't make them any less significant to our culture, because what people see today as a parking lot, it still aligns with who we are as a people, and our values and culture continue.
Let's go back to Elizabeth in Oakland here. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. Hey, good morning. And I'm just so extremely thrilled, like all of us that have been supporting Segorite. My organization, Holy H2O, does a lot of tours that go along the shell mounds on Bay Street. But specifically, what's interesting is that these shell mounds and the places they were located were at the mouths of these gorgeous, beautiful open creek. And not only were the creeks covered, but so was the history of the indigenous people. And the relationship between the invisibility of the creeks and the indigenous history is really astounding. And so as these shell mounds get uncovered, or as we tell the stories of the shell mound, like at Bay Street, Temescal Creek, one of the most beautiful creek openings, same thing, Strawberry Creek, why was it there? Incredible creek ecosystem. And so as the shell mounds get uncovered, so does the history of all our relations, not just, you know, the creeks, the creek ecosystem and everything that goes with it. So there's a linking together of our ancestors, not just Homo sapien ancestors, but of all our relations.
Elizabeth, that's a beautiful point. I mean, Karina, I wanted to use that to kind of talk about your plans for the site, particularly around that side of things. I mean, there's a couple of specific questions from listeners, which maybe you can take in a chunk here. One listener asks, how will the 4th Street site compare with the Oakland Hills site near Joaquin Miller? Will one be more public and the other more private? Kenichi on Discord wants to know if the land trust is going to involve other Ohlone groups in the planning and operation of the 4th Street site.
Well, that's a lot to take in. you know, the Oakland site is a beautiful site, a relationship that we have with the city of Oakland that gives us a cultural easement, a reverse easement that gives us a lot of ability to clean up the area in the Oakland Hills that overlooks our territory and our bay. This is more in the flatlands of an urban area, the West Berkeley Shell Mound, and we will actually have title deeds. So there's a difference, right? Hmm. Land back comes back in many different forms, through cultural easement, through lease, long-term leases, through actual purchasing of land. And so this particular piece of land that we have freed in Berkeley will be in a flatland area. So it won't overlook our bay in the way that it could have before all of the development. It will be open to the public, just as the one in the Oakland Hills is. We are hoping that this cultural center that we're dreaming of will be in partnership with many different organizations in the Bay Area to help us. It's a huge undertaking that we will need a partnership with. The Segurite Land Trust will hold title deed. The tribe will have an easement onto the land, and then we are dreaming up, and you know, we'll have a lot of lawyers involved with it, about creating a different, maybe a possibly a different organization that will actually go through with the entire process of starting creating this cultural easement. And so that's something that the Segurite Land Trust Board of Directors will be talking about strategically in our meetings pretty soon. But I think that, you know, it's going to take a it's going to take a huge undertaking to create. It's like creating a museum or, you know, something like that. A cultural center is a big thing to think about. And so, yeah, so thank you for that question.
Yeah. Councilwoman Han, there are obviously a lot of other potential, you know, indigenous sites in Berkeley. I mean, does this give you some energy to, like, move forward and try and, you know, find more possibilities for land back in Berkeley?
Well, it's certainly, you're right. There, this whole area, everything that we now call Berkeley, and most people who live in Berkeley, I would say, are sort of uninvited long-term guests on this land. There are many, many important sites. There were villages that were more populated in one season or another. There were different areas where different activities took place, gathering acorns, you know, being in this relationship with the bay. So there was a rich life, not just at this village and Shell Mound site at the mouth of Strawberry Creek, but on the UC campus, higher up on Strawberry Creek. We have a park called Indian Rock Park in my district, which was an important site. And there are many, many locations. Some of them, sadly, have been completely built over. Others are in what are now parks. But I think now that we are almost done with this 8-year uphill climb that we've all done together, I am certainly ready to start thinking, and obviously thinking with the leadership and guidance of Karina Gould and others, you know, what are our other obligations? How are we honoring and keeping and protecting all the other incredible history and cultural sites that Berkeley contains? So yes, but I want to give Karina Gould and the trust a little time to enjoy and develop this particular victory, and then we'll see what's next. I mean, it's all stolen land. So,
Chris writes in to say, Karina, you know, I learned about the cultural significance of Shell Mounds when I lived off of Shell Mound Street in Emeryville about 10 years ago. Are there other specific Shell Mounds your organization is trying to reclaim, or other types of lost cultural sites that are currently of interest?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. You know, like I said, there were 425 and many more that were found in, you know, since Nels Nelson's map. And there are, of course, many cultural significance. We are working with the State Parks Department and East Bay Regional Park District and many other utility organizations that are having conversations with us about particular landscapes that are in our area that we can work with to co-facilitate and watch over. Not all of our shell mounds are public, and for a reason. We do not have a lot of protection around our cultural sites, which is why it's important that we don't tell the general public where every site is. Sites that have been built upon, like the Emeryville Shell Mound, like the West Berkeley Shell Mound, those are sites that the tribe has decided to make public, especially when we want to preserve and protect it. Emeryville Shell Mound, we have people come to the day after Thanksgiving for over 23 years to recognize the devastation of what had happened and continues to happen with that shell mound. And just like we have people that have helped us to raise awareness about the West Berkeley Shell Mound and the importance of it. Now, we really are really protective of many of the places that are not built upon, because we don't want people to show up there and do amateur archaeology or destroy them anymore. Right. Yeah. Right. And so, but yes, we're working with the other organizations and entities in the Bay Area to preserve and protect many other places.
Farima, City Attorney Berkeley, one listener wants to know, will the land trust pay property taxes on the property?
That is a good question for, I think, Michelle Lee, who's not here, their attorneys.
And one other comment from a listener. Becca writes, this community center vision and the shell mound has been in my prayers and ceremonial blessings for years now. I'm so excited to support this vision. Can't wait to see this beautiful reincarnation in my beloved Berkeley. Please let us know beyond the Shumi land tax what the community can do to support this vision. I think you can go look up the Segorite Land Trust website for right now. Also, is there going to be a big ceremony real quick, Sophie Han, tonight at the Berkeley City Council meeting?
I don't think there's it's a typical meeting, and this is on consent. It's the second reading of the ordinance. We had a really nice presence at the first reading. Mm-hmm. I think this might be considered a little more of a technicality.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But we have gotten hundreds of letters from people encouraging us to take that final vote. And so we have a lot of people with us.
We've been talking about the site of an Ohlone shell mound in West Berkeley being returned to native hands with Sophie Han, Berkeley City Council member, Karina Gould, director of Segorite Land Trust and spokeswoman and tribal chair of the Confederated Villages of Lishan, Melissa Nelson, board president of the Segorite Land Trust, and Farima Brown, city attorney for Berkeley. Thank you so much to all of our guests. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.